This is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. This is the Expecting Aerialist podcast, now with the Digitant Family podcast. How's it going, guys? Hope you're having an amazing day. Before we start, check out the show notes. Lots of really great free resources at Wrap Your Head Around Silks, including Roll It Out, our two virtual live classes that go on every week. It is so beneficial to me, so I hope you guys join me there. And then I have some new stuff coming up. Just keep your eyes peeled. All right, my friends, today this is Sandra Daniels. She's the director of language program at the Globe Academy. It's a K-8 public school in Atlanta. She's also an aerial instructor. And she joins to talk about how language diversity in our schools and our aerial community allow greater access to our art form to students who don't speak English as their first language, as well as giving English speakers greater opportunities to thrive in both the classroom and our aerial studios. So I'm so excited for you guys to meet her. She's awesome. All right, guys, let's get started. So you've been in the office for a little while, but the kids are there now.
Yeah, it's completely different with the kids here. It's much more meaningful, you know, like that's what we're all preparing for.
Yeah. How do you feel about back to school this year?
It's really so nice to come back and to not have to worry about the COVID issues. And
yeah.
I mean, it's like a whole regular year, which is really exciting.
Yeah. First year that's the case.
Yes.
Right? Because last year we were still wearing masks maybe, or just a little scared.
Yeah. And it wasn't the same. You know, the kids weren't the same in the classrooms. Teachers weren't in the same place. I think now we're at a really good space that, you know, we can get back to learning and growing.
I love it. Okay. Sandra, would you please introduce yourself to our listeners, a little bit about yourself, your job, both your jobs? Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. So the way that I usually introduce myself is, je m'appelle Madame Danielle. Je suis la coordinatrice ou directrice, mon nom de langue. 早上好, 我叫 Daniel 老师。 我帮我们的老师和我们的学生. Hola, buenas tardes. Yo soy la señora Daniel. Yo soy la directora del programa de idiomas. Hi, I'm Miss Daniel. I'm our director of language program. So I'm the director of language program at a public school in Atlanta, Georgia. We have a Mandarin program, a French program, and a Spanish program. So I work with students that are in teachers from grades K-8. And then we also have a high school credit program, and we have eighth graders that are taking the AP exam and passing it with threes, fours, and fives in Mandarin, French, and Spanish. And then my other job on the weeknights or sometimes on the weekends, depending on the schedule, is as an aerial instructor.
And you're in Atlanta. What's the school that you work for?
I'm at the Globe Academy. So it's in capital letters. It stands for Global Learning Opportunities Through Balanced Education. So you'll always see it in big caps.
Oh my goodness. I love that. I love that introduction. I was not expecting it, even though I knew what you did for a living. Oh my God. So she heard the podcast with Roya with the baby sign language, and she was like, oh, is this relevant? I was like, yeah. I mean, really, this podcast is about our lives and how it interweaves with everything. And along with your job, you end up fusing your jobs because you end up doing immersive language in the aerial studio too.
Yes. It was really funny because a couple of weeks ago, we had the twins. So like the circus twins, Annika and Olivia, and they were there with the kids with the circus camp. And I was there with a private student, and I usually instruct her in Spanish, and they were just sitting there, you know, staring at me with their mouths open. And they're like, we knew that you spoke Spanish, but we didn't know that like you can actually instruct in the language, because it's a totally different thing, you know, being able, I mean, as an instructor, you understand that as well, like being able to walk someone through something orally as they're doing it, you know, modeling on the ground with your body as you're speaking it, giving succinct instruction, but doing that in another language is another thing. It's, you know, it's different.
Tell me about your history with all of this. Like, when did you learn, like, how many languages are you fluent in, and when did you pick them up?
So I speak 5 languages at a professional level, professional fluency. That is Italian, French, Portuguese, French, Spanish, and English. And those I speak just day to day normally. And then I speak a little bit of Mandarin. And so I speak an elementary level of Mandarin. And so I started when I was in high school. When I was little, I was 12. My dad was very good at Spanish. And I'm from South Georgia, so it was a little bit different. The accent was a little bit, you know, it was there. But I noticed how when he would talk to people, his accent, you know, the way that he would speak with people, it really connected him with everyone in a unique way. And I wanted to do that as well. So I decided, okay, I'm going to try to learn Spanish and then get better as I go. And so I just started acquiring languages and developing a way to teach myself and others in an effective way. And that's what I do currently.
I love this. Okay. So this is my, not bias, but I feel like people who have you have to have a proclivity towards languages to be able to pick it up like that. Do you see that? Or do you feel like it's just like you put in the work and you can learn a language? Because it's so hard for me. I tried.
So this is what I was listening to. And I was like, no, okay, that's not true.
It's not true.
The wrong way. I was listening to your podcast, and I was hearing you, and you were like, yeah, it just doesn't work with me. And the main thing that I was thinking, I was like, oh, it matters the way that you teach. So the way the instruction is done, it needs to be done in a meaningful way. I mean, we as humans were programmed to learn language, you know, whatever language that may be. So everyone has that capacity, whether it is through signing, through, you know, emotions, body language, a written language, spoken language. We all have that as humans. And that's what makes us human, right? That's the one thing that makes us different from, you know, some of the animals. We do have some animals that like use different echolocution and like things like that to communicate. But we're all made to do that. So everyone can do it. But it matters. The thing that matters is the way that you do it. So like there's certain methods that are not effective, not as effective as others. So yes, they're, you know, anyone can learn. It's the way that you're learning.
I mean, that resonates because I think back to how I tried to learn Mandarin and Spanish, and it totally makes sense to me why it didn't work, because we never used it. We just learned from a book, and then before I really mastered like the simple things like hello, how are you, my name is, we would move on to like tenses and sentence structure, and I never, like, it moved past me so quickly, especially at the college level. Like, I was learning Mandarin in college, and I was like, I can understand what you're saying, because I totally was taught wrong, but not even just by one teacher, just many teachers.
Yeah. So that's something that our State Department is actually working on. They have a critical languages program called StarTalk, and the mission is to help students learn critical languages. So critical languages would be those that are important for the United States for a variety of reasons, whether it's like economic partner or if it's security reasons or something like that. And then, so it's for helping the students learn and then also teaching effectively. So that program exists all throughout the United States. And then there's also dual language immersion programs like mine, but then world language programs as well, where you're focusing on the, you know, there was a huge revolution that happened, which focused on the communicative method. So like what you were saying, you're not like looking at the book, memorizing like a vocabulary word, and then repeating and listening and repeating. It's more using it in practice. So using it effectively instead of just memorizing that one phrase, you know, that you have in your head and you're like, oh, when will I get the opportunity to use this? Instead, you're communicating actively with someone in an authentic exchange. And the authentic exchange means that you need to send a message and the other person is understanding the message and responding to it.
And how many of the students that you have, you said you had something like over 1,000 students that you're in charge of, whatever. How many of those students are first languages English?
A lot of them. So surprisingly, with our school, so we have a one-way, which is called a one-way foreign language immersion program, which means that most of the students speak English at home, and then they're learning that second language at the school. And then the way that our classes are done are in cohorts. So we have two classes, and we'll have one class that is in English one day and one class that's in Mandarin or French or Spanish. And then they switch with their partner teacher each day. So they'll have the students for a full day doing content language instruction. And there are, so we have a couple of cohorts. Like we have a cohort right now that's about 30% of the students are native speakers of Spanish in one of our classes. However, with that said, at least in every class, there's about three students, at least in every single classroom, and we have 24 students. And they speak it at home. So we've got leaders in the classroom. But you'll notice it's really incredible because since the students, you know, everything is done in the target language. So the teacher is speaking to the students and the teacher will say, okay, on se met en rang, and then show a little picture of the students in a line. Okay, je vais en rang. And they start, you know, walking up there, showing the student, you know, walking up, placing the hands, you know, by their sides, looking forward, making those body movements and gestures to the students. So then every time they hear that word, then they know what that means. So you're learning everything in context.
And so what does that mean?
So that means that the students will even say to each other, they'll be like, Padre, you know, and tell each other like, hey, it's time to get in line. But basically, you know, they're using those words that they hear over and over and over every day because, you know, especially things like making the line, you know, you're going to do that, oh gosh, you know, several times each day, you know, 20 times a day, you're going to make a line to go to the bathroom, to go outside, to go to connections courses, to go to the cafeteria, to go to carpool. So every time they're hearing these same vocabulary words in context, it's kind of like, you know, when you're going to your daughter or your child, you know, and you're saying, okay, milk, milk, and you're making the sign language for it. And they're seeing that same language over and over and over and over. And then they start to use it as well. So you're saying it and you're doing it. That's the same thing that our teachers are doing. You know, they're saying, you know, vamos a hacer la fila. We're going to make a line, and they hear fila and they know, you know, and students will start repeating, okay, la fila. And everything happens in that way, not just the line, but, you know, academic learning. So math is the same way. All of our math problems are written in the target language. Students do their math. We have writing. So, and this is something that's really special, especially for families, like you were saying, that your Chinese heritage. So especially for heritage learners, you know, even if it's like second, third generation, those students are learning the language in an authentic way, and then they're able to communicate with family members. So that's like one of the biggest things that we see that happens is, you know, if students are born in the United States, that's the majority language. They're used to hearing it everywhere, so they're preferring English. But then when they're at a dual language immersion school, where they're learning everything in the second language, you know, they're starting to acquire language, and families are telling us that, oh my gosh, you know, our daughters are so proud to be Hispanic. They FaceTime with their grandparents. They speak in the language. And it's, you know, that connection that could possibly be lost, where the students aren't losing the ability to speak back. Because sometimes what will happen is maybe students understand,
yeah,
and they might, you know, if they're in a regular program or they're just learning at home, they might be answering back in English. When we maintain a high expectation in the classroom, that's when the students are speaking in the language, bringing it back home, bringing it back to family members.
I think if I like actually learned how to speak Mandarin, my parents would have cried. I think, you know, because I don't have a connection with my grandmother, my only living grandparent, because we don't speak the same language. Like, she doesn't speak English. I don't speak her native tongue. And it's, you know, I think my parents kind of let it go over time. So if little Carrie was going to class every day at your school, would I be immersed in one language for the full day?
Yes.
Okay. So like one day I'm like, everything is Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, what would it be?
It would be English. And then Those two teachers are, we always say it's like a marriage. And so those two teachers are teaching all subjects, math, science, social studies, reading and writing, but in their languages. The biggest thing to note is that the teachers are not repeating the lesson. It's a direct application. So, because students are, you know, can be selective hearers and listeners, if they figure out they're teaching the same thing, then they might decide not to listen on whatever language they prefer. So,
oh, I see. Like, I don't have to pay attention because tomorrow it's going to be English and I can understand it.
Right.
Got it.
So they have to plan side by side. So we make in the schedules time for them to collaboratively plan together. And we protect that time. So it could either be like during carpool time or recess time or connections time, but they have the two teachers have that time to sit together and say, okay, how did they do in their math assessment in French? And how did they do it in English in your class? And compare and see, you know, how it's going. And of course, the lessons are planned in that way that, you know, lesson one was taught in English. The next day, lesson two is taught in the target language and vice versa.
And this is a public school.
Yes. So completely free. And
is this all over the country? Like, can I find a school like this in LA?
Yes. And I will, there's actually one that is probably 5 minutes walking away from your studio.
Shut the door. Seriously? Well, in LA too.
Yes.
I just learned that you could like lottery into a zip code that's not the one you live in.
Oh, that's great. See, we don't have that exception.
I recently learned that I have to back check myself on that. But like one of my girlfriends, they live in one zip code and then they're commuting into another one. They just had to do the process of, you know, it's not an audition. It's called oh my God.
Yeah. It's the lottery. That's what it's
lottery.
Called.
Okay.
Well, so
Sandra.
Yes, there's 360 schools like across the United States.
that are structured like this.
3,600, sorry.
Why have I never heard of this?
3,600 dual language immersion schools that are public, and that's not counting the ones that are private. So private, it also exists as well. But yes, yeah. And then the one that's close to the loft is called Benjamin Franklin. They have Italian, German, French, and Spanish programs for K through six. And then, of course, they've got the flag program that goes all the way through high school. So there's a whole trajectory within, and California was actually one of the pioneers. They're one of the largest states that has the most number of dual language immersion schools.
And what administration did this happen under? Like that this started? Was it coming from a federal?
So this first happened. There was a kind of, there was a huge dispute about learning for students and effective instruction for English language learners. And so the big court case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court was Lau versus Nichols. And so that was in the state of California, where they won, essentially saying that, you know, we can provide effective instruction for students and that maybe English instruction, just as it is, isn't adequate for students that don't speak English. And so the same can be true, like flipped, you know. So there's different types of dual language immersion programs. Like I mentioned, the ours is one-way foreign language, mostly immersion, but there's two-way programs where 50% of the students in the classroom, in the cohort, speak English at home, and then 50% are maybe native speakers of Mandarin or usually Spanish or French. Those are the big ones in the school systems. And so in that case, those students are able to have access to, you know, their home language and their second language as well.
Okay. Wow. So let's go to the aerial stuff. So I wanted to, this is what I do a lot. I vent a lot on my podcast because I did come home and like vent on ASA a little bit, but I didn't feel like there was like a good space for me to vent about this yesterday. So I'm doing it on you right now. So, cause you'll feel me on this. This whole entire population will feel me on this. So I was teaching a Silks one yesterday and there's 10 people in the class, which is the max. And I have 5 points up for 10 people. And they were, two were a little bit more advanced, but then the rest of the room are still getting their hip keys, are still getting their inversion in the air, all the stuff. And they're all of my students that are regulars. There's no new people in the class. And over the second half of the class, like the last hour of the class, I cannot tell you how many times somebody said, can I do something else? And like, it's cumulative, right? I get asked this, I don't even know how many times. And not one person asked me more than a couple times. It was just like, this person asked me, then that person asked me. I lost my shit on them, Sandra. I lost my shit by the end of the class. I sat them down. I was like, collectively, you guys have won yourself a motherfucking lecture. Because, so, oh my God, I felt like such an old woman because I was like, do you know what it's like to learn a craft? Like, I was grandmothering them because I was just like, why do you think this is so fast? And mm-hmm. I lost my shit, and actually so much that I actually feel bad about it. But Sandra, you have to tell me if I'm balanced or not, because I feel like, first of all, I think I'm having perimenopause. I feel like my whole body's falling apart. I feel like my mind is lost. I feel very emotional and like my body's changing. And so I feel like maybe I wouldn't have felt this strongly about it a year ago, but then it's also 2023. Do you teach adults and kids or just adults?
Mostly adults now. I did have the little ones, but yeah, I can totally, You know, I think especially with the growth of like TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, yes, we've got kind of like a trick culture. And so
I know
we have a lot of students that have become kind of trick hungry, and they will just look up things and ask, you know, can we do this or we do that? So that makes it tough. And, you know, it's true when you have a class that you've got students at totally different, you know, so-and-so has been coming to the class for the whole month. So they're like on pace with everything. But then,
yeah,
you know, this one has been traveling and it's been out of town for work and is now popping in. But then they'll
and they want to do exactly what the other girl's doing.
Yeah. So yeah. I try to think about like sequences that could be added onto or taken away from. So then I'm not necessarily like I can differentiate in that way that people are doing similar things. So then it's easy for me to like spot pretty quickly. And, you know, when I'm looking up and, you know, everyone's kind of doing the same type of movement. Or I will sometimes have, you know, if I have certain students that maybe it's totally different, that maybe we're still learning how to do a footlock, and I've got these other people that are, you know, on wheel downs. It does not happen very often because most of our levels say, you know, instructor approval required, or, you know, you should be able to do this or that. But those are the times that I'll probably do something different if I notice a huge, huge difference. But yes, there's definitely that hunger for, and I think that's an aerialist thing too, you know, that yeah, a lot of people get a lot of adrenaline from it and it's exciting. So,
well, the thing that I kind of think it is, as well as that very like understandable part, the longer I do this, I've been teaching for a while now, the loft at least for 8 years. First of all, we attract people who want the cool shit. We're in LA, blah, blah, blah. But the people I'm talking about yesterday, none of them were out of towners. They were all in town. I treat the out of towners a little bit more like, okay, I know you're only here on class. Let me give you some candy, aerial candy, you know? But for me, it's like this customer service air to coaching. Like customer service and coaching cannot be done in the same breath. Can you imagine a gymnastics coach trying to do customer service while they're coaching?
Well, it's like it's so funny because so I always laugh because one of my bosses, Ella Espinosa, which is at Artist Asylum. So she's always like, oh my God, Sandra, I don't know how you do it. You say the thing that you need to say, but you say it really direct. And I don't think I could do that. She's like, that's why I got you doing that. But yeah, it's true. It's like, it's a bit of customer service, but then also like, all right, we're not working on that right now today. We'll be working on this, like the redirection. But I think it's kind of like the, you know, I guess I think about it also for, you know, it's the same thing like with kids, right? So like if you can kind of get that out of their system. So if there's a student that has something like really in their head, like I'm going to do this. Well, we're not ready to do that yet. You know, let's work on this. I'll give you this thing that'll help you get there. Usually it goes pretty well because I think about the kids, you know, when they're like really focused on something like that person's got this pencil and I want that pencil, even though all the pencils are completely the same. Like I want that right one because that student has it, you know, and kind of like, okay, we're not doing that right now. We're going to be looking at this. We're doing like that redirection.
Okay. So how old are you, Sandra?
Oh, I hate to say it.
Okay. You don't have to. It's okay. We all know I'm 46. I've been 46 since May. When I first learned dancing, were you a dancer ever?
No, I wasn't. So I started aerial 11 years ago, but I started in Brazil. And so it was very much like, okay, Sandra, if you're going to join this, like, you're going to hold yourself in the air for a minute. I'm going to time you. And then climb on one side, climb on the other one. All right, now you're going to do a foot lock. Can you do that on each side? Yes. Okay, you can join the class.
Oh, okay. Okay. Totally different. We don't make students do that. Yeah, we don't make students do that. I wish. So when I first learned to dance, first class I ever took was tap. Bean has a little costume that I wore when I was 4. She wears it now. We would all stand equidistant from each other on a line that was like taped on the floor and with our hands behind our backs. And this is not in China. This is in Ohio, okay? And she, who is now passed, God bless her soul with her cane, she would, and it didn't feel like pressure necessarily. She would come to each person and you would do the little thing and she would move on. And if you didn't get it, she stayed on you until you got it. And it felt to me like she cared. That's what it felt like. And students nowadays, see, this is how you know that I am an old lady in my mind, because I'm just like, you guys deserve that too.
Yeah.
You deserve for me to sit here and watch you do a hip key properly before I give you the next thing. And they have no tolerance for it. They don't have tolerance to be uncomfortable with the thing. And I believe that is why so many of them yesterday in particular asked me to move on, because I don't know when the last time they had a teacher who made them do it and watched.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about that? Because I'm like, okay, I went off on them. Why were they all doing that to me yesterday? Because I was really focused on them. Like, what do you think about that? Give me your analysis on that.
The teacher side of it. Well,
yes.
So I think, form is really important. And so if students aren't executing the, you know, whatever it is, hip key properly, they might be compensating in a way that might hurt them later, depending on what that is. So if they're like pulling too hard with the arms, like, or having their hands, like Jill would call it, like no man's land, like not all the way straight, but not all the way at the chest.
Oh, like, my God. All day
between.
Long. Yes.
And so,
do you think partially it's because they are just so uncomfortable with somebody paying that much attention?
I mean, I think like there's a balance there, because you want the student to be safe. You want them to be able to execute the movement safely and properly where they're not going to hurt themselves. And then you don't want to be teaching something, you know, ahead of where they are. So I think that that's important. The other thing is, you know, some students, like, you'll know your students and you'll know which ones might get a little bit embarrassed by something. And then you'll know other progressions as well that you can do with students. So like, if it is a hip key and, you know, you've been doing the bent knee hip key for a very long time, okay, let's try straightening one leg. Or let's try straightening both legs to do the fan kick. You know, that's helpful as well. But I think some students like might be kind of either it could be embarrassing that they feel like, oh, they're watching me, like, don't watch me, like, it's not great yet. Or it could be a thing where, you know, the student's thinking, oh my gosh, I don't even care. I just want to like do it, like do the quick hit key where I'm like throwing myself into it and then get to the movement. And I think that always makes a big difference when there is that focus on the process. I know whenever I'm talking with students, I'm always like, okay, so we're going to make a movement. We're going to sit up, slide the hand, breathe. Now we're going to pull up with the arm, push down with the leg, hips up to the pole, you know, so that they can take those steps instead of seeing like the yanking and thrusting kind of, you know, because sometimes I think it's easy to forget, you know, to forget to breathe or forget to straighten the legs or point the toes or something like that, because you know, you're going too fast. And I think it's important to kind of slow down.
Thanks for letting me do this with you, Sandra. I also feel like, is this like the new Carrie? Just completely, like, when I got divorced, I felt the same way. I felt crazy and angry. So maybe my hormones are going crazy, and maybe it's part of me too. But at the in the same vein, I feel like they deserve the lecture. But I haven't done that in a really, really long time. Sandra, do you, like, how many languages do you actually teach Ariel in? Like, you have students that benefit from that.
So actively right now, I have students that speak Spanish. So I have a student that's in my rope classes and also takes privates with me as well. And she's, yay, I'm excited because she's performing now professionally. So I'm excited about that. So I'm proud of her. But whenever she's in class, I'll speak, you know, to her in Spanish and then to the other students in English. And then I have a private student that is younger. She's 12. And she prefers Spanish. She's in the process of being adopted. So she's visiting, and her mom is an aerial, or well, her potential mom is an aerialist. So the potential mom host was thinking, okay, this could be a good opportunity for her. So she also speaks Spanish. And then when Volta was in town right before the pandemic and everything, I had some students that spoke Portuguese, so I would instruct them in Portuguese.
Now, being an aerial instructor is it's a very specific skill set, right? Very specific. The language, even like in English, is very specific. Now, do you feel like when you got to the point where you had that language skill set in English, you could easily just do it in another language? Or no?
I don't know. It's not like it's easy. So it's kind of like, because Olivia and Annika were like, oh my gosh, Sandra, you know, and they're like, oh, but you're a linguist. So okay, that makes sense. I'm like, but wait, it's the same as saying, like, I'm an aerialist. Like, it's not easy because I'm an aerialist. It's easy because you train, right?
Yeah.
Or you work at it all the time. Like, you're always training. So that's the same thing with language. You know, you want to make sure that you have that vocabulary, you know, straight in the top of your mind so that you can tell the student effectively in the moment and describe the motion appropriately. So that's kind of making sure that it's, you know, in your mind and fresh in your head, but I wouldn't say it's necessarily easy. I enjoy it. I enjoy the challenge. My favorite classes were always when I had, a few students. Like, I have a student that speaks Spanish, Miguel, and he's like, oh, I love it, 'cause then you get to speak in Spanish with me. And I would instruct, you know, even when I'm modeling, I'm saying it in English, saying it in Spanish, you know, even when I'm on the ground, like instructing the students in the air, same thing. And that's when I'm happiest, because then it's more of a challenge. It's kind of like, because I used to work as an interpreter as well. And so you have to be listening to what the other person is saying while you're talking so that you're able to interpret with them, you know, to them quickly.
Oh, that must be a hard skill. So, listeners, the bean just came over to sit on my lap. Sandra, she's been behind me this whole time on her iPad. She does podcasting very well.
Yeah, I was about to say, I didn't even see her. I usually hear her on all of your podcasts.
You want to say hi to the listeners? No, why not? She told me yesterday, she's like, I don't want to say hello to the listeners all the time.
Oh, okay. Well,
I was like, okay. Okay. I didn't mean to say, like,
Mommy,
because obviously it's
Mommy,
not.
I'm hot.
It would be impossible
Mommy,
for me.
Mommy, I'm hot.
You're hot. I'm hot too, but we can't turn on the fan or air conditioner because we're recording. Huh? The summer is rough for us for podcasting because we have to have it quiet. It would be something impossible for me. But for you, Are you in English doing it effortlessly and then in Spanish searching for words?
No, it's the same. It's the same as talking in English. So when I speak in another language, I speak, you know, I just speak it just like a normal person.
Yeah,
My husband and I, that's our home language. It's actually Italian. And so we speak to each other in Italian. And then when we're around my family, we still speak in Italian and everything, which is kind of funny because, you know, my family will be like, why are you guys doing that? Like, why are you talking about us? You know, what's going on? And we're like, no, we're just like talking to each other regular just because that's the language that we talk to each other in.
You know, my mom and dad.
I want a new pillow.
You want a new pillow? Can I do it for you after the podcast?
No.
Can you say hello to the listeners?
No, I want a new pillow now.
What pillow? You want a pillow from the other bed? Go get it.
Yes, but I want...
I don't know what to do right now because I'm podcasting. Go ahead and get it yourself.
Okay, fine. I'll have a squat again.
So, my mom and dad, right? They speak...
I'll have a squat again.
Okay, perfect.
Stop talking to her.
I can't stop talking. I'm podcasting.
I'll like when you talk to her.
So, no, her development is totally happening. Over seasons of the podcast, and it's awesome. Listen, I have to talk. That's my job.
I don't like when you talk. It's too loud for me.
It's too loud. I'm sorry. She goes, She has to have the last word. Goes, My parents speak Fukien at home, which is southern dialect of China, and like I understand things like when my mom says dinner's ready. It's also because dinner is on the table. But then, like, I understand a certain amount, but then they'd be like, the blah, 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 Carrie. Blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm like, they're talking shit about me right now. What are they saying?
It is helpful, I will say. Because with my husband, I'm like, okay, like, say it in Italian.
Because the kids don't yet fully grasp Italian.
Well, no, it's like if we're around like my family, I don't
oh,
have
yeah,
children.
Yeah, you don't have children, but if you're around,
if I did, they would speak and it would be full home language Italian for sure. But yeah, so like with my family, like if you want to say something like, oh my gosh, that was so irritating, blah blah blah, like, you know, like, you know, like if he's like, ah, I'm like, parli italiano, non parlare in inglese. So then, you know, just to remind him, because it's funny because the expletives will be like sometimes in English.
What language has the best cuss words?
I think in general, like Portuguese is definitely the most creative.
Okay.
Because, especially Brazilian Portuguese, because there's always different words and meanings and so much slang that's like constantly being created. Whereas I don't feel like some other languages aren't as fluid in that way. So there'll be different expressions that are made out of something, like something that happens in pop culture, and then they make like a word out of it. I mean, I guess we do that a little bit in English, but I feel like they're the most creative for sure.
Oh my God. Like people like you, I'm so impressed. Like I'm so impressed. And because the only thing in my life that I feel like that with is movement and communicating that movement. That's the only thing, like, I talk about this all the time. My dude just plays piano. He doesn't read them. He just plays and he makes stuff. And, like, I can't do that. I don't have, this is why I'm still not convinced that, like, because I view it the same way as music, language, music, and movement. They're kind of in the same category when it comes to, like, you can learn it. Anyone can learn it. But not everyone is going to have that innate, understanding of it that you can't really put your finger on. But Sandra is trying to figure out if she's going to debate this.
Well, everyone has the capacity for it, right? For language. And then in the areas of the brain, like the musical, artistic, creative area is also the language area. But it's so interesting because the kids, they're able to go across like lobes of their brain very quickly. So I remember when I did, I had a number talk with the students. And so I'd given them a word problem, you know, and the students, you know, I'm calculated because my native language is English. So I'm instructing them in Spanish and, you know, I'm thinking in English, doing the math problem in English in my head. The kids are doing it so fast, talking to each other like, oh, first I did this and then I did this. I first added these numbers and then I rounded this one up and then I took this off and I added it at the end. They were all talking about their calculations. So the students are able to quickly do that. There is a critical language theory that, you know, is a theory that says that if you learn before puberty, learn a language before puberty, it's easier to acquire the accent of that language and it's easier to acquire the language. I learned after. So I was able to learn and I learned, you know, I was taught in a similar method until, you know, I learned from other teachers that did kind of the communicative method. But I think really it has to do with the context and being immersed in it. So actually using language effectively, because if you have an instructor that knows how to model for you and is acting out the thing while they're doing it, you know, same in like aerial arts, right? Like, so, you know, when you're saying the movement, you're doing it. Like you're saying, okay, and sliding the hand up, sneaking the elbow through, lean, I feel the fabric on my back, I'm in my Arabesque, that kind of thing. You know, you're doing the same thing with language. You're narrating what you're doing. And I think that just, it's contextualized. I think that's what makes the biggest difference, like in the instructional piece.
I mean, really thinking about it, I was not really a talented, like I didn't have like a lot of natural talent. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right about that. I'm going to have to find a psychologist, like a psychologist that understands all the stuff to explain it to me, because
you can do somehow, it. You can definitely do it.
If I did it right, like if I did my year or two of Mandarin studies in the classroom and then went to China and just stayed there until I could do it, I would probably be speaking Chinese by now. Probably. But I don't know.
There's communities too. Like, you know, you can search out opportunities to be able to use the language in a meaningful way. You know, like here where I am in Atlanta, there's a lot of markets and areas of the city where you can find authentic food and have the opportunity to go into different grocery stores and talk with people and actually use it. But you can definitely do it. There's even apps that are immersive too.
I'm so lazy, Sandra. So wait, I'm lazy for some things. I have a question for you. Do you guys have Ranch 99 in Atlanta?
I don't know what that is.
Asian grocery store? Or H Mart?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have Great Wall H Mart. Yep.
Okay. Do you ever go in there?
Yes, I've been in there.
Now
we do field trips there with the students. We'll take
when
them
you start
in a big
speaking
bus.
Chinese to the people that work there, what are their facial expressions? That's what I want to know.
Well, they're usually like really surprised. They're like, you know, they're like, "That's what Dolan." You know, they're like, she just spoke in Mandarin, like, you know, but I think that happens pretty often, even like not even in Mandarin, but I think it happens in other languages. I remember back when I was interviewing one of our candidates by phone. It was before we did the video conference, like call and interview, and we didn't have our pictures on the website and all of that. And so I was interviewing the candidate, and I always just spoke in the language that, you know, I was interviewing them in. So I was speaking to this person in Spanish, and I'd asked, you know, what is your favorite thing, you know, about teaching? And the teacher went on and was like, well, you understand this because you're Colombian, and, you know, Americans just don't understand our culture, and it's so important, and just went on and on and on. And then when the candidate came in person, they, you know, I greeted them. I was like, hola, buenas tardes. You know, before I could say anything, they were like, oh, I was speaking to someone, Miss Daniel. And I'm like, usted estaba hablando conmigo por teléfono. You know, like, okay, you were talking to me.
That was me.
But yeah, that happens. That happens pretty often. I know in Brazil it happened a lot, that people would, you know, come up to me and say, hello, can I help you? And I'm like, oi, falo português. They're like, ah, ela fala português. You know, like, oh, we didn't know she speaks, you know, she speaks Portuguese, you know, but yeah.
Sandra's like strawberry blonde over here. So
yeah. Very, very, you know, typical American looking, tall, long red hair.
Yeah. You're going to throw off a lot of those Chinese people at the H-Mart. But our Ranch 99, which is like H-Mart, like, it's so funny because over time, it's just like, now all of the people that work there are completely multicultural. They're not Chinese necessarily.
Gotcha.
There's a lot of Hispanic people working there. So it's interesting. And then I go to the Vallarta, which is the big Mexican grocery store here all the time, because their prices are amazing on produce. There's no one in there, and it's so clean. The bread is so fresh. So Bean's like, Trader Joe's for orange juice, Mexican grocery store for candy, because she likes getting candy there. She hates how the Chinese grocery store smells, because it smells like fish. It's terrible. Anyways, Sandra, this is amazing. And I feel like the listeners are, I think they're here for it. I think we're just here for our lives, because that's the important part, you know? It's like, Ariel's just what sews us together.
Yeah. Well, that and movement and language, okay, you know. Okay.
Look at this one.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, look at his face. Hey, what'd you learn in Sunday school yesterday?
I made create.
Yeah, you did arts and crafts. What else did you learn?
I learned.
Where does Jesus live?
At my heart.
Jesus lives in your heart? And then also where else?
At Hawaii.
Jesus also lives in Hawaii, she told her teacher.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm not particularly religious, but we're, you know, she's learning about all types of things. You want to say goodbye?
Bye.
Yeah. Sandra, bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. I feel like, Sandra, if you were my teacher when I was in high school, I would have totally have picked up on these languages, potentially. I had been thinking about it a lot since we did the interview, and I'm like, you know, I don't think I'm great at languages, but I got pretty good at English somehow, and I'm now writing. I write things, so I believe you. I just, you know, it wasn't that way when I was in school. So for this next generation, hopefully some of those kids will, you know, get the benefit of it. I did leave a link in the show notes. It's okay, Bean. Can you let me finish? I did leave a link for you guys in the show notes to find a dual language school in your area, public school. So that link is there for you. If you would honor me with a 5-star rating and a review,
It really, 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 really helps. I would love you and appreciate you forever. Or just leave a line. I will highlight you on my website. 5-star rating, just smash it. It really, really helps. Bean, can you please let me finish? I'm almost done, like a half a minute, I promise. All right, guys, I told her if she just let me finish this, we could go to the pool. And I think she... Oh, good job, Bean. And I think she kind of forgot that the moment she still wanted my attention. So there's that. But it's, I really appreciate you guys being here. Check out Wrap Your Head Around Silks for all the resources that I have there for you guys. And have an amazing week. I'll come back at you guys next time. Over and out. This is Carrie, Digent Podcasts. This is the Expecting Errorless Podcast.